On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
So one of the things that I have on my notes that I didn't include in the notes to you ahead of time, so sorry if I catch you off guard, but you have a book out, correct? Or two books now, right? Big Hitters Manual 1 and 2.
I mean book's a strong word. It's more it's like 50 page like ebooks. Yeah, that me and a good friend of mine, William Whalen, who over in England put together.
Talk to me about those books. I'm gonna call them books, whether you want to call them books.
So they're kind of basically like a general principle of like, hey, like one of the biggest determinants of like hitting the ball hard and fast is being just pure vertical force output. Like taking away from the technical side, obviously the technical portion is obviously from a baseball, it's recognizing pitches, recognizing shapes, timing, staying on plane. But from like the pure physical aspect, it's maximum vertical force output, guys who are big and strong, hit the ball hard as fuck. And so let's turn those singles to doubles to home runs, things like that. And it's still a word from like Mulatto and Javan, but just like phenomenological like idea kind of came about. It was playing Whalen, he works a lot in golf and fighting and like motorbike. And in golf, obviously, like they call tiger proofing courses when Tiger Woods is like in his heyday, in his prime, and he was just cranking balls so far. And people hated him for it, just always ruining the game. And obviously now you have like guys like Kepka and Bryson DeChambeau. We come back from quarantine like 235 or something like that, and gain like 20 pounds. And like wasn't all good weight, but he was just cranking balls like insanely far. Then you have like long drive competitions as well in golf. And he was seeing a similar thing of like from his force play data and what we were seeing also when I was at the Astros. It was just like guys who hit the ball, who tended the ball the farthest and the hardest, you know, greatest exit velo, where guys who tend to be also really strong, whether like from a lower body perspective, they tend to, their constant impulse numbers tend to be really high and more like elite end. They were, you know, heavy trap bar pullers, you know, 450 plus for more than one rep. They were pretty decent squatters, like 315 plus. We were like, that's from a physical aspect. It's like, that's such an easily trainable thing. Just chasing intensity in the weight room from a pure like vertical force output perspective. And then we kind of just talked about that in the ebook, and use examples in the book of like Aaron Judge, who's a fucking giant. It's a ball so hard. It's like, as you know, looking at baseball, it's like the tainted thing. It's like the thing no one wants to say, but it's like some of that steroid era. It's like what those dudes do. You're on gear because it turned his singles to doubles, and the doubles to home runs. It's like Barry Bonds, Jeff, Mark McGuire, Jose Canseco, A-Rod, who didn't do it. It was all part of the process. It's like, hey, how can the ball as strong as hard as I can? It's like, oh, be bigger, be stronger. And you're starting to see like more of that now, but now it's obviously more clean. The guys, you know, being like, oh, okay, like, if I get stronger and get more jacked, like the ball far, like, from like pure dashers, like George Springer was a good example for us, like a center fielder, like he cranked balls pretty hard. We had a guy in Double A with me who hit a ball at Sevilla like 121.5, trap bar 700 pounds, and he weighed 260, so, and he was 6 foot four, so that helped.
Of course. Yeah, I so think
that was the inspiration behind it was like seeing those things and seeing some of the data that kind of, you know, kind of correlated with as much as you kind of could in that sense of like take away. And we mentioned them both in like volume 1 and 2 of just like take away, not talking about on the technical side, not talking about the rotational aspect, the staying on planes, like those things you obviously have to have from like pure technical model of hitting. But if you have that and then you marry it up with like chasing some physical outputs, like these are the potential benefits you could have.
Yeah, I think the game is going that way, right? Like it. And it's good. It's really good that players are starting to put more like conscious
fan friendly.
Yeah,
fan friendly, I would say.
Yeah, they're putting more conscious thought into like their training and how they're recovering and all of that, and you know, getting stronger is kind of becoming a thing in baseball. And like we talked about, like the max intent stuff of like trying to hit the ball as hard as you can, and like I brought my brother to see our hitting coach before the holidays, and I told him, I was like, my brother's a big dude for a freshman in college, and I'm like, he should really be hitting the shit out of the ball, and it just doesn't have that like oomph off the bat.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, well, try this, right? And then as soon as he did it, like the ball is flying off his bat. And it's like you said, it's the combo of like him being a strong kid and like putting him with the person to give him the right mechanics for the thing, right? Because baseball is a very technical, very skilled game. So like learning those aspects helps. But if you have the capability and of physical output, and then you marry that, like you said, with the skill coach that's going to get them in the right spot, like, the results are incredible. And the thing I like about golf is I love to watch those long drive ones where it's like high leg kick and just absolutely fucking mash the ball, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to worry about any reactiveness. You don't have to like play off of what the pitcher is doing. It's just balls on the tee and just mash it as hard as you can. And like,
100%.
The thing is like golf, at least from what I've heard, right? Like golf is so far ahead of all the other sports with their technology and like their swing mechanic teaching and all of that. And it's like, but they're so behind on the lifting aspect, right? It's like, oh, these golf specific drills. It's like, no, just get strong as fuck and just blast the ball.
Yeah. It's like, and then learn how to chip and putt and you're good.
That's my game. Like I don't play golf or anything, but I've gone golfing one time. I was like, I'm just going to drive it as far as I can. And then, try to just putt, like take out all the stuff in the middle, right? So yeah, it's admittedly I haven't read the books yet and they're on my list to read, but it sounds like, you know, you're able to take like your own actual experience and like what the data is saying and just apply it to something like and make it practical and applicable for anybody.
Yeah it's kind of what we kind of do. We start to make it pretty like a simple program to run as well. Like, you know, it's like there's 3 days a week. It builds out to you in total, you know, to 16 weeks. So like, put a program to add that kind of value to it. Like simple, like only like a barbell, a dumbbell, like a cable machine. Like, so try to make it as simple as possible in that sense. Very like meat and potatoes, like kind of training. Like, it's not a lot of fluff kind of involved in it.
And that's the thing. Like, those are the best programs, to be honest. Like the ones that are just meat and potatoes. It's like the hard stuff. And it's like we talk about, like, people don't want to do hard stuff because it's too hard, but like, that's the stuff you need to do.
Yeah.
So in your mind, what makes a strength and conditioning coach successful?
Ooh, I think open-mindedness is a big factor. I think because there's always things we can always learn, like having that, and it's cliche now, like a growth mindset, I think super important. I think the other one's being like just authentic, like just be, I think sometimes a strength coach is easy to feel like, I mean, people want to try to put themselves in the box from like even, sometimes as silly as like how we even look. It's like not every strength coach doesn't look the same. Not everyone, needs to have a bald head and a long beard. It's like, it's okay. I think being authentic of like who you are, being comfortable like your own skin. I feel like I've always felt like players and people in general, like we can sniff out people who are inauthentic like so easily. People who are disingenuous. So to me, I think that kind of open-mindedness, growth kind of mindset. And then also like that being authentic and genuine. I think self-confidence as well. So I don't feel like, because I feel like as transition coaches, we're very easily like self-deprecating unnecessarily when like, yeah, a lot of times, and even like a baseball setting, but I think in most sports, like as a transition coach, you actually probably know more of what's going on than anybody else on your staff most of the time. Like, because you've probably done the research into your sport or multiple sports you work with, like so in depth. You may not know the tactical side of it, but you probably know the technical side. You understand that psychological because we have to as S&C coaches, because we're not the sport coach and we're not an athletic trainer or like a physical therapist. So we have players open up to us on things that sometimes we're like, man, I don't want to hear about your dating life, I'll be honest with you. Like, and so I think sometimes we're overly self-deprecating as a profession And I think because I think that she sees some of that, I think, in even like salaries, I feel like a tangent here, I think sometimes don't have a negotiation of like a salary. So just we all, I'm just a servant. It's like, no, man, it's like you're a professional. Just like the head coach is a professional. It's like the assistants are professional. It's like you're a professional. It's like you're also probably one of the only people in the building with two degrees, more than likely. 2 degrees, constant continuing ed. It's like you deserve to be paid well too. Like you deserve to be treated with level of respect. Like you're not just this like servant, yes sir, yes ma'am person constantly.
So two things.
Sorry about that rant right there.
No, because we're gonna keep ranting here. But first, the authentic thing, like it's one of the, like, just being really honest with you, is like I really enjoy following you on social media because you'll like just tweet anything. Like it doesn't matter what it is. It's not just strength and conditioning. And like, there's so many people right now that are trying to make like social media their thing, right? Like, oh, yeah. I sell this, I sell that, I do this, I do it's, and like, good for them, right? Like, I could never do that. Like, I just post pictures of my dog and like me doing weird things in the weight room. But it's like, I love when like I'll see on your story on Instagram, it's like one is like a Kobe Bryant, and then it's like a cheetah in the wild. And then it's like your book, and then anime. Like you traveling. It's like, it's just like, it's authentic. Like it tells me really who you are, right? And so like my bio on Instagram is strength coach, husband, for dad, podcast host. That's all I post, like those, because that's who I am. So like I'm trying to be authentic. I'm not trying to put out like that fake image of, you know, something that's not, like, just because I'm a big league strength coach, like, doesn't make me a good strength coach. Like I'm just another dude that happened to be in the right place at the right time.
It's not like your whole person either. Like it's like you do so many other things.
Yes, and that's a big thing nowadays, is like everybody is connected to the logo, and like I need to be this strength coach here at XYZ. Like, no, like you just need to be a strength coach. You can make an impact anywhere. And not only that, like once you're not a strength coach and you take that hat off for the day, like be somebody else. It's okay to turn off the strength coach. It's okay. I promise you it's okay. And then the other thing, like you said, with pay and like self-deprecation and self-confidence, it's like that's something that I've kind of had to learn as I grow up, is like when we first get in, like you can't really pick and choose because there's many people that want jobs and there's so few jobs, so like you kind of have to accept it. But then I feel like we accept it and we just kind of take that our whole careers, and like, oh well, you know, it is what it is, we don't get paid, or like we're kind of a doormat, or like people kind of roll over us. Like, it's fine. Yeah. Like I'm a servant leader. So at the end of the day, it's like, this is still your career. This is still your life. It's still your profession. Yeah. Like it's, you still have a family to take care of. Like you asking for more in a contract negotiation doesn't make you a bad person. In my mind, it doesn't make you a bad person, right? Like you're trying to get what you are justifiably like valued, what you're bringing to the table. Like, you're there at your job because somebody thinks you're going to do a good job. Like, you should probably get paid for the value you're bringing, or whatever it is. Maybe it's not pay. Maybe it's, you know, whatever you want to fight for, like pick that fight, have like reasons that back it up, but don't be afraid to make that. Don't be afraid to do that. Like, I think too many strength coaches, I agree, are just like, they just accept whatever it is. Like, oh, here's a contract. You're the strength coach at so-and-so, like, okay, sign right away. And it's like, you can negotiate things, especially the older you get and the more time you have in your career and all of that stuff. Like I said, at the beginning, you might have to just accept, but as you go,
earn your right to be like, no, well, hey, like I am worth this certain salary. I've been doing this long enough. I've shown up, added this value and things like that. So I'm not fresh off of GA anymore. Like,
right. Yeah. You got years under your belt. You got life experience under your belt. And like you've made tangible changes. And that's the thing, is like, you have to have that stuff to support. You can't just be like, I want to be paid more. Like, well, why? Well, then you don't, right? Like have all of that prepared for whenever that time comes. But I don't think asking for more or asking for what you want and what you're like deserving of makes you a bad person or a bad strength coach. Like, I think those are totally separate things. So
100%.
Do you have advice for others in the field, maybe young coaches looking to get in, or just older coaches that, you know, just want to stay on top of their stuff?
I'll say advice for younger coaches is be extremely open-minded, be willing to talk to you and learn from anyone. Don't Like, if you go to a conference, like, don't just find a person with, like, the professional sport logo polo on, or, like, the Power 5 polo on. It's like, a lot of times, some of the biggest lessons you learn are in people who work in minor leagues, people who work in Division II schools, Group of Five, smaller colleges, JUCOs, D3, high schools. It's like, they're facing very, very, like, uncontrolled environments at a lot of times, and tons of variables. So I've been being super open-minded. Don't necessarily be, I think you can specialize in one sport. I know some people will say, like, you shouldn't, but I think you can be like, oh, I'm going all in on baseball because that's the sport I played growing up. It's one I love the most. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, like, at all. You can be an elite specialist in one sport, be an elite specialist in one sport. That's fucking awesome. But constantly still be open-minded, to still be able to learn from outside your sport as well, outside your realm. I think another one for young coaches, like, being authentic, like I said before, like, don't feel like you need to post you lifting or whatever, or like some Canva post constantly on Instagram because you see a lot of other coaches doing it. It's like, yeah, man, like that guy or girl, they've been coaching for a decade. It's like they want to do Canva posts. So yeah, they've been coaching at a high level or done a high quality of work for 10 plus years. People really want to know this. It's like, you've been coaching for 2 years. Like, you don't have to build a brand yet. Like, let's just become this coach first. Become comfortable coaching. Become coaching large groups and things like that. So I think it's part of that, kind of like being authentic and like genuine of who you are. I think for like older coaches, it's still being very much open-minded because there is new information coming out constantly. Not all of it's valuable. Being able to discern of what's like, okay, what's going to add value to like my environment, but also knows like, hey, like, this is interesting and cool, but it just doesn't fit for me right now. And be like, oh, it's just because you see everyone doing it at the time doesn't mean you need to do it. Like, in a prime example in basketball currently, is like, it feels like everyone in the country is doing overcoming ISOs, or French contrast, or both. Like, every basketball student is like, yeah, man, I'm not gonna do French contrast. You know, we haven't earned that right. Like, no one on my team is on that end of training where they need to do French contrast. Like, we're just gonna do some regular contrast work and some general training. A lot of times, in some of our cases, some of the guys just adding 5 pounds every time we come in the weight room until it stops working.
Yeah, I think the fear of missing out is super real in strength and conditioning right now. And it's like,
too much Twitter and Instagram. Follow less coaches. That's my advice for regardless of where you're at in every profession. Follow less strength coaches.
Yes, just follow more other stuff, or follow people like you that just post anime and a bunch of random stuff and less strength and conditioning. It's like the conference syndrome, right? Like, you go to a conference on Saturday and then your whole program is changed on Monday because strength coach X does this. And it's like, if that wasn't in your program before you went to the conference, it should definitely not be in there after. I know, like, you took it, but like you said, it's good for that person's situation, right? So you have to discern the information that comes in, you have to filter and then pick what may work for you. And it may only be one thing, right? It's like, I could give you our whole program, and you can look at it and say, great, but I can't do this because of X, Y, and Z. But I will take that little part and I'll add it to mine.
100%.
So, and then the other thing that you said is like talking about specializing in a sport for young coaches. Like myself, I always knew I wanted to be in baseball, but there's different avenues in baseball, right? Like you may want to work with basketball players, but that could be NBA, college, high school, private setting. And so for me, like, I knew I wanted to do baseball. I put my eggs in that basket. I still worked with other teams in grad school. And then I did the pro setting and the private setting and then kind of made that decision from there. But I always knew baseball was my thing, right? Yeah. So, like, I would agree. I don't think you have to, as a young coach, like, it's good to work with a bunch of teams. And if you don't know what you want, like, that's perfect. You can kind of filter it out, right? It's like an undergrad program. Like, if you don't know, like, but if you know, work with those athletes and like build some relationships and build some experience working with them. And again, it could be private, college, pro, high school, but just work with all of them. If you really want to be a women's soccer strength coach, just try to get as much women's soccer experience you can, but still work with everybody else and learn from there. But Just know that, like, hey, I'm always working towards this goal.
Yeah, exactly. That's like nothing wrong with having just like a goal of like, this is what I want to do. My end goal is to be a professional women's soccer strength coach. Just like, yeah, like go full speed ahead towards that.
Yeah, and there's plenty of coaches out there that will guide you. Like, if you reach out, and I'm sure if people reach out to you and be like, hey, I want to get into college basketball, like, do you have some guidance for me? Like, do you have some advice? Like, you'd be willing to talk to them. Like, if somebody wants to be a major league strength coach and they call me or text me or email me, I'll respond. Like, I'm not going to just give you my job, but you know what I mean? Like, this is the process. Like, a lot of it is just being in the right place at the right time. And then that's the other thing you said is, like, when you go to conferences, like, those big name schools or organizations or whatever, like you said, so for me, perfect example, like I said, just because I'm a big league strength coach doesn't really mean anything. But for me, my value came from, I started at a D3 where we didn't have a budget. So I had to learn there. And then I was in the minor leagues for 6 years, like grinding it out minor league style, the life.
And bus rides.
Yes, that taught me so much that made me the strength coach I am. But now, like, once you get to the big leagues, once you get to those big five type of schools, like, they have so many resources that it makes their job that much simpler, right? Like, they're not wearing, like, I don't wear the nutrition hat. We have two strength coaches. Yeah. We have a nutritionist. We have chefs. We have a mental skills coach. We have all the skill coaches we could want, right? So, like, just because I have that name or that position doesn't make me a good strength coach. And if you go to those places with that end goal in mind, or like, oh, if I talk to this guy, like, he's going to be in my network and I'm going to be on that path. Like, I just don't think that's the right advice, especially for young kids. I agree 100% with you.
Especially. So you're telling me you're not out shagging BP? Big leagues?
It's a little different up here.
I mean, you got at least be dropping ball for sure in a cage.
Do you have continuing education resources for us? Books to read, seminars to attend, podcasts to listen to? Just where are you going for your own continuing ed?
I think one of the books I'm reading now is Mental Models by Shane Parrish, Volume 2. So I really like his series of his three books now. And those are really good. Not just the general information and trying to find out what those various heuristics can, like, you know, apply to other aspects of life. A big team of Ed, like, I mean, it's gonna sound like a plug just because, like, him and I, like, are great friends now, like, using my mentors, like, Strength Coach Network was a big one. For me, as far as being access to presentations and other coaches. It's also probably going to sound like a plug, but like Strength Coach Fundamentals, of course, like 1 and 2. I did the Return to Play module on Volume 2, so then that's really good. From my conditioning perspective, I really like Joel Jameson's Ultimate MMA Conditioning, eight weeks out. I think that's a great book. It's super simple to follow, made direct to the point. Also has tons of everything he talks about. He has multiple examples for everything as well. So it's easy to, like, oh, I'm going to try the cardiac output method on myself. I'm going to try, for some reason, I want to torture myself. I want to try lactate threshold work. It's like things like that. Hit Manual by Martin Bouchette is a great conditioning book. It's like 600 pages. It's basically a textbook. So I suggest buying the ebook just so you have to lug it around. But that has a breakdown of every general, like, conditioning history and history of, like, kind of HIIT, quote unquote, training, like high intensity interval training. And it kind of uses HIIT as just a general name for anything that's interval based, not necessarily just like what we think of, like, HIIT classes that people go to, like, at a CrossFit gym or something like that. But also has a breakdown of every single sport, like, conditioning aspect too in the book. And that's, like, great, like, from badminton to cross country skiing to baseball, pitchers and position players to basketball, everything. And the chapters are written by people who work in those sports currently too, at, like, very high levels. You know, that's not, like, and just tons of, like, research papers that, like, are resourced in the book also. So I think those are probably my big ones right now. You know, it's check out, like, very regularly.
Joel Jameson's is like one of those ones where I kind of go back to every year and like reference, yeah. And just, it's given me like a deep understanding of conditioning, and it's to like to read that and to really understand conditioning and look at the big picture of sports and then like have people bastardize conditioning just has always like deeply burned me. I haven't like outwardly showed it or like been super aggressive about it, but deep down I'm like boiling inside, like, oh, just read this book and like come back to me and we'll talk. But
it's like 130 pages, you bang on like 3 days, like, come on.
Yeah, and it has, like you said, examples of everything. And the other thing that you said is like you can try it on yourself, and I think to me, like, going back to our conditioning talk, like, a lot of coaches nowadays put their own bias on what they do for athletes. Like, they're big, strong power lifters. Like, oh, I don't run and I'm in shape, so like you don't have to run because your game doesn't require a lot of running or being in shape. It's like we as a whole, we have to put our bias aside and like train the athlete for the sport that they're playing. Like, at the end of the day, they're athletes. They're not weight room warriors. Like, some of them are never going to come to the weight room, and they're still going to ball out in their sport.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like to finish these with a lightning round. I'm hoping you have time for me. Four questions. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Ooh, that's hard. I'd probably say Buddy Morris. Like, let's try to find every podcast Buddy was on. Read probably every like Elite FTS article. Stuff like that. It's probably Buddy Moore is probably a big one. And like probably Louis Simmons as well, early on, big like West Side Barbell. I love the documentary West Side versus the World. I'll probably watch it 10 times. Like,
yeah, it's awesome. I made my wife watch it with me. There was a video going around on Twitter of Buddy Morris at the Cardinals game yesterday with cut off. And I don't remember who posted it, but they're like, oh, look at the Arizona Cardinals trainer. And people are like, no, that guy's like a Hall of Fame strength coach. Like, do not belittle who he is.
Put some respect on his name.
Exactly. Next one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Ooh, one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be? I'm going to go with I'll probably just keep it easy. I'll probably go curved treadmill, honestly.
Okay. Biggest accomplishment?
Ooh, actually, no.
It'd be a sled.
Sled sprint, heavy sled drag, heavy sled push.
I was thinking about this the other day. I was doing sleds, and like I ask everybody this question, and most of the time it's barbell. And like my answer was probably barbell, you know, when I first started this podcast, and I was pushing the sled, and I'm like, I can do what I want with this. I can push it heavy. I can push it fast. I can push it side to side. I can drag it. I can row it. Yeah. I can throw it. Like, I kind of like the sled. biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Ooh, biggest accomplishment professionally? I'd say probably just being able to like work in pro sport in multiple countries, I guess. I think that's something. I never think about it when you're in it. I guess that'd probably be it, I would say. Personally, recent personal win was putting together a trampoline for my nieces for Christmas.
Recent I bet personal they were win. Thrilled.
Oh, it took fucking forever, dude.
full size backyard one.
Massive full size like. Trampoline. I was like, this is a terrible idea. Why did I say yes to this?
But I guarantee you were on it afterwards.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, of course.
I'd double bouncing them and hoping they don't like fly over the net.
now you have to get a hoop for them.
Yeah.
A little slam ball action in the backyard. Last one. Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Ooh. I go professional skateboarders. I love skateboarders, my big hobbies, or like artists. So I really love art, really love like graffiti and street art too. It's like a mural, like artist. Very average to below average drawer, but like in my mind, like a past life, maybe I was good at art.
I can respect that. Hey, I appreciate you coming on, spending time with me, just being super open with me about things. If the listeners want to get in touch, where can we get more? Social media the best place, or is there a better place to go?
Yeah, I'd say social media for sure. Like T Kennel Fizz Prep on Instagram, and then TK Fizz Prep on Twitter. Those are two like I use the most. Like if you add me on LinkedIn, I'll probably never see the message. I never go on it. So I say yeah, Twitter and Instagram are probably the most one. But like fair warning, like Chris said, like it's not tons of strength conditioning. Like there's some strength conditioning, then it's like an anime picture or something like that. Like it's always things like that. So it's very hit or miss if you're looking for information in terms of strength conditioning.
I'm telling you, I love it. Every time I see your little picture pop up in my stories, I'm like, what has he got on there today?
Yeah, it'd be like mountain range and like Tibet or something like that.
I appreciate you coming on, man, and like I said, spending time being open with me, and we'll definitely be in touch soon.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part two of this two-part interview with Terrence. I hope you enjoyed this one. I think both parts have a lot of really good information, and I would highly recommend checking out all of his content, his books, and his social media. Three things that I took from Terrence in this episode: earn your right to negotiate what you want in your job, combining solid strength and conditioning practices with quality skill development and technique work is where the magic happens, and set goals for yourself and align your actions and decisions with those goals. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.